You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. An afternoon drive home like no other.
Anyone claiming or anyone believing that this Maple Leaf team could even somehow contract a curse has not actually been a fan of this team throughout their lives. This is a team that hasn't won a cup since 1967.
The curse is already
What dead. Curse? Yeah. You know, how are you going to add a curse?
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and now up on TSN 2. Game 7 tomorrow night. Leafs Bruins can be heard right here on TSN Radio. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6:30. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, and Dave Poulin in the house.
Join us.
Join us. You know, joining us.
You like that, don't you?
It's a sound.
Join
like
us.
That, don't you?
Let's hear it again.
Join us.
Join us.
It's new.
It's fresh. The sound bite we use now.
Hey, what happened every day? We finish the show off with...
Join us.
Yes. What happened to the dress code? I'm in last week. Hayes looks like a million bucks.
The jacket. He had the seersucker.
He had the Did it have to? That wasn't a rental, was it? Did it have to go back?
No, but I definitely use credit, and I haven't paid it off yet.
That was a really nice jacket, and so I came in. I'm like, I got to put a suit on to go to Overdrive for 10 minutes.
Well, it's going to be worn tomorrow, and the O-Dog's thinking about wearing his alumni jacket on the panel tomorrow night. How would you feel about that?
What is your record with the?
5-0 when he's got it on.
Wow.
I'm dead serious, Jamie. Every game I went to, I wore the alumni jacket. So it was a win.
They lose tomorrow night. Are we in here burning that thing this week?
Like, that's a lot of pressure to put on that jacket.
Yeah.
There's enough pressure on that jacket.
That's right. Yeah, from all the seams, there's pressure. It's a full court pressure.
There's some stress levels on that jacket.
Do you have a Bruins alumni jacket?
You know, I played there for 3.5 years, went to the finals once, went to the conference finals 3 times, and I know I haven't been invited to one single alumni event.
They don't.
Why not?
They don't really, I think they associate
you
with
Philly. Didn't you wear a letter?
They do. I wore a letter the entire time there, 3.5 years.
Why can't you get any
love? Get an email.
You did something bad.
And I got no video when I went back. No, you know what? Boston is... I think the most provincial place in the United States in terms of they stick together and tighter in that area. And the guys that are running the alumni are from Boston, and they played for the Bruins.
Yeah.
And they have their group.
So because you're Canadian and you moved on with your career and never remained in Boston.
Yeah, I think that's it as much
they're
as
like,
anything.
We don't like you anymore?
If his name was Charlie, he'd be fine.
Charlie Poulin. A lot of the guys that I played with there grew up in Boston, played for BC or BU, and lived there their whole lives and continue to live there. So that is what makes up the alumni group. But it was like that here for a long time, was it not? Or it still is?
I don't know. You see, I mean, you would know. You're an alumni.
Well, it's I would say the big part of it is a local group.
You're local here. You're not inviting someone in who lives in St. Louis who played for the Leafs.
Well, I think they're on the emails of the alumni, but it's like a guy that's living in Vancouver is not going to show up for a powwow.
Right.
And
didn't Kelly Chase play for the Leafs for a little bit?
Yeah, he did. He had a cup of coffee.
Would he be on the alumni list?
He could show up in the alumni box. He could.
He's not tough
enough. Can't confirm or deny that.
I think he probably could.
But Chaser played like 35 games or something.
He wasn't here long.
Tyson Nash, I think, was here for a couple
games. Nash was here for a bit. He was a big Marley. Yeah. He was a very big presence with the Marlies. But there's a difference between being invited with the understanding you're never going to accept it because you live across the continent and just you don't exist to us anymore.
I don't exist to them anymore, really.
So do you hate the Bruins now?
No, I'm fine with them. I got some buddies there, and I think I'm a flyer, and I think they view me as a flyer.
Yeah.
And I'm not a Capital, although I do get invited to all the Capital events. I played there for 2 years.
I got invited to a bunch of the Hurricane events, and then I made the comments about I was embarrassed to be an alumni.
And it didn't go so well?
Well, the invites slowly...
It just got put to the side.
They don't come in, like the alumni game.
You know, like I was drafted by the Islanders and played, you know, a couple years there, 3-4 years. The new owner, that John Ledecky, I think his name is, you get emails from him.
Yeah, he's trying to really...
He's really trying. I get emails from him inviting to the alumni box, saying, hey, we've got it. Anytime you want to come down, just give us a heads up. Like, they've really tried to rejuvenate. I think the previous regimes tried to alienate, or didn't try to, they alienated the situation and just didn't work out, and there were some disgruntled people. But now it's almost like the new owner's trying to welcome back some people. I don't know. I get 5 emails a year from him.
Really? But when there's a group like the Islanders in the early 80s,
yeah,
that's what everyone wants. Well, ours was the Cup teams in Philly, right?
Right.
And
right.
Then the next, the two teams that won the Cup, and then the next decade, the two teams that went, the team that went to the two finals. But it's funny because it's no different in Philly. There's a group that lives there.
Yeah.
And what happens is they play a lot of the alumni games. Well, then a big one comes up, like the Winter Classic.
And they're desperate.
And they don't make the cut.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So
like
they
local bring in, guys don't
they,
make the
they
cut.
Bring in bigger names from that have retired somewhere else.
Exactly. So
it's like Eric Lindros.
Eric Lindros is back. Here. Exactly. He's back for the Winter Classic. And
that's where it gets dicey.
That's where it gets a little dicey.
That hits a nerve.
Well, that happened with the Maple Leafs when in 2014 when they were down in Detroit, right?
Huge. I was involved.
You were involved. And there were two different games. There was the quote-unquote big game. And then there was the secondary game.
Pigeon game. I didn't even get invited to the pigeon game.
You played like 100 games for the Leafs.
Oh, I know. But there were other way bigger pigeons that were like main, front, and center.
Yeah. But the pigeon game, like, that's got to be a tough, like, yeah, you're not invited to the big one.
I think the pigeon game was actually at the baseball stadium.
It was like America.
It
wasn't even at the big house.
It wasn't at the big house.
They were like, there's a ballpark, and I think they have ice, and
hey, at least
if you bring a stick, you can play.
At least you made the secondary cut.
Right.
That's the thing.
I mean, Detroit and Toronto, there's rich history, just like in Boston. Even Philly's been around for a long time.
Chicago, like, where's the line? That's I've always wondered that, and it's not just for alumni situations. There's even the NHLPA alumni. There's guys who played 12 games in the National Hockey League.
There's stars in that, on that team.
You know, exactly. Like, it just, it's hard because where is the line when the NHLPA says, hey, we're going to put it out to all members?
Well, I played for the Red Wings one night in an alumni game. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they needed a guy who was around.
There you go.
I was good. I looked good in red.
Wear it with pride.
I did.
So we had this conversation in the previous hour, and I stated the case. I think there is way more pressure on the Maple Leafs tomorrow night than the Bruins because of the history of both teams, because of what Boston has achieved. The Leafs just simply have not. Do you have a sense one way or the other which team would be feeling more pressure going into the game tomorrow night?
I think it's equally on both. I really do. I think there's a lot of pressure on the Bruins. I think they thought they had a really good chance to win the Cup. That's where they're at. And
the Leafs keep telling people they believe that too.
Yeah, but
do you think they really do? Well, they've
said it. First of all, the core of this group has won a Cup, so they know what it means to say that, and they've been to the finals once as well. They lost to Chicago in the Cup finals. So, you know, and they've got a captain who's older than the four of us put together, and so he's allowed to say whatever he wants. And I think there's as much pressure on the Bruins, I really do. And I think for the Leafs, there's a mental side of this. And it's bigger for some individuals than it is for others. Right. Some guys are totally unfazed going in. Like, my guess is Mitch Marner's totally unfazed going in there tomorrow.
Yeah.
But some guys, this is a really big deal mentally, and it's a big thing to get over, and some guys never get over it. In every sport, it might be a golf course, it might be a ballpark, it might be whatever that you can't play well at. And it's interesting because I was with the Leafs management for a little over 5 years. The question I've had to answer the most was that night in 2013. And one summer I was skating with Kenny Linsman, and I had been traded for him, so I didn't know him. And so I said to him, best part about winning the Cup. He looked at me and said, didn't have to answer one question all summer.
Yeah.
So my whole career, the summer was made up of answering questions, and I didn't have to answer one question about what happened.
That's a good
point. I think we still answer questions. I do, from an organizational standpoint, what happened in that game.
Right.
You know, the lives that game changed. I mean, Matt Fratton has a breakaway at 4-2 with 4 minutes left. People don't realize that. 4-2 with 4 minutes left, Fratton has a breakaway. And he's got an unbelievable shot. And he tries to deke.
Yeah, he tried to deke backhand.
Backhand.
Yeah.
And misses. If he scores that goal, does that change his career?
The whole thing's kind of changed, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's what's at stake here. Like,
Does that change James Reimer's career?
I think
if Fratton scores that goal, does that night change James Reimer's career?
Furthermore, when it was 4-1, everyone in Boston was saying Claude Julien's done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people were already issuing statements. He's fired. He has to be fired. He better be fired after the game. Like, I remember reading tweets, which can be dangerous, but, you know, Boston Bruins media were already tweeting out, this is, enjoy the final 20 minutes, Claude, you're done. And then they survive, they win, and they go to a cup final, and Julian's there for another, like, 4 years.
And then coming out of it gets a five-year deal a day after he is fired.
So, okay, so we just make this statement, everyone's different. Is there two guys? I mean, is it that obvious? Two guys? It's Freddie and Jake for tomorrow. That you're kind of circling.
But the way Jake has been playing, Jake has not been playing a lot of minutes.
I think he's hurt,
Gardner,
too.
I think he is hurt, but I don't think he's an important piece.
He's hurt.
He can't even shoot the puck on net.
Right. So I don't think Gardner's not going to be in that position. Jake Muzzin's playing the role of Jake Gardner.
Right.
Because Gardner played 20 minutes, 20 plus last year, and just kept falling into the deep end, falling into the deep end. He will not be granted the same opportunity. He won't be allowed to redeem himself.
He needs
his team to lift him up because he's not going to play enough.
15 minutes tomorrow.
But barely play 15.
He's hurt. You can clearly tell. And I think he's fighting through it. And I give him full credit for that because I'm sure, as we all know, a back injury or something, that just hampers the whole body. You know, Freddie Anderson coming into this game, and we talked about it, I think it was game four. They lost 6-4.
Yeah.
I'm getting the mix. I didn't think him or Rask was brilliant in that game, but I think Freddie's been fantastic in this series. But it doesn't matter. It's what are you going to do in Game 7? I thought he was fantastic yesterday.
He was great yesterday.
But they lose. He was fantastic in Game 2 where they lost.
But that can be... Listen, this game, Game 7, can play out 50,000 different ways.
Right.
And that's the beauty of the sport. That's the beauty of this roller coaster we've been on and how unpredictable it is. But if all else fails... It may have to be Freddie Anderson pulling a Martin Jones and making 50 stops and they win 2-1.
I like his odds a lot better, and I like Martin Jones going into games 5 and 6.
Right. Freddie's been locked in. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Today, everyone's playing the would you have signed off on game, which I understand can be goofy and ridiculous, but I think even 12 months ago, I would sign off on Game 7 back in Boston, a chance to truly exercise your demons.
Right.
Plus, now that you're in the moment, Freddie Anderson's playing well. He didn't play well last spring.
He's playing very well.
Playing very well. Yes, the special teams has been a big problem for them, but 5-on-5, the Leafs have more than just held their own. They've played well. Like, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow night, but I didn't have much optimism in 13. I didn't have a ton of optimism last year. I have way more this year. Just based on what we've seen through 6 games.
We talked about it out of the gate, and Pooley, wouldn't you agree that it's really an opportunity tomorrow for somebody to go legend? I mean, this market is just starving for...
Yeah, it is.
Like a playoff series gamer.
There's more to this.
Right.
Yeah, like if Mitch Marner tees off on the Bruins tomorrow and has 3 points, or Austin Matthews has 2 goals and has 7 for the series. Yeah,
could it be Stevie Yzerman putting under the bar against St. Louis?
Yeah, like it's just... It's an opportunity for someone to go legend.
Right.
No
sure.
question.
Well, it'd be the first road win in a Game 7 since 93. Nikolai Borshevsky, his name is still ringing out.
That's what I was talking about that earlier. It may not be Marner or Tavares or Matthews. It could be Connor Brown. Borshevsky was not Dougie Gilmore.
No.
He was his winger, though.
He got opportunities. He played, but he was not the man, clearly.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Maybe it's Zach Hyman. It's somebody whose name, maybe it's Patrick Marleau, who hasn't been fantastic this year. Who's capable, and really, you can erase some demons, technically, this year.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm intrigued to see? First defensive zone faceoff shorthanded, who takes a draw for Toronto?
Do you believe Mike Babcock will adjust?
Zach Hyman was 1-5 yesterday and lost 5 faceoffs to Patrice Bergeron. Bergeron was 17-6. Bergeron rolled along at 76% yesterday.
He was terrific.
And part of it is not just the pressure of Zach Hyman, who's not a centerman, taking those draws. It's the volume of draws. Like, Patrice Bergeron has taken, he's averaged 23 faceoffs a night in the playoffs. The second most of any player. So not only are you asking a non-centerman to go in and win the draw, he's not in a groove from taking faceoffs. So you played center. You know what it's like. You get in the middle. You get in a groove. I want to take a bunch of faceoffs. You know, I can try different things against you. I'll be really intrigued to see if he puts Tavares out to take draws.
He should, but he should have done that 5 games ago. Like, this isn't just yesterday. Hyman's been getting torched the whole the whole round against Bergeron.
But these two led to goals.
Yes.
Directly.
Blatantly led to goals. Like, that's the thing about the penalty kill yesterday. Yes, they, you know, the Bruins went 2-for-2. So
it was much better.
But structurally, it wasn't a problem. Like, they lost a draw, and then they got a lucky bounce. It went off Haynes's knee and in. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah. You watch that draw closely, I believe that's a set play. I believe he's tying up Hyman because he knows how strong he is. And both wingers are coming in from each side to help win it. Now, not to shoot it directly in the net, but to help win the draw. Because Marchand immediately jumps to the inside.
Right.
And that's not what he's doing. And the wall jumped to the inside as well. Pasternak jumped to the inside as well. So I think that's a set play that ends up in the net.
Well, and the second one was just a weird rebound. And you got to give credit where it's due. Torrey Krug got a lot on it.
Well, he did.
And placed it perfectly.
And we were talking about it, throwing things... seam, and you hit a skate, you hit something. I mean, Freddie goes paddle down, it goes out that way, and Krug skates into it. I mean, these are the types of things that, you know, in a game seven, it could be a bounce. It could be, it's not always going to be the most pretty play that's going to be a difference maker. And, you know, the Bruins found a way to get it done. You're right, on paper, it's 2-for-2, but it was very unique. I will say, if you're a Bruins fan, I liked their setup. That they worked well to get it down low. Johansson was looking for
different
options. A little different look, exactly. And Owen and I were sitting beside each other, and Johansson had nothing but time to actually walk off the goal line.
Each time he caught the pass,
he
was 6 inches further ahead, which is the sneak attack.
Yeah.
And then Hainsey kept getting a little higher. The next time, he was a little bit further ahead. And I was sure he was walking.
I couldn't believe it. I'm like, this guy's got the puck with no pressure at all. And it was almost like he didn't know what to do with himself.
Okay, you watch for that next game.
Well, no kidding. The 2-on-1 goal line should be right available for him.
Yeah. Now, one other thing that Cassidy said post-game that I really, really was intrigued with. He said, they took away our bumper, which sets up in the middle, right? On the power play. He said, but our first shot in the power play is just to retrieve the puck and break them down from there.
No kidding.
Which is
a great idea, too.
A great idea, because it puts it in the creativity of your players.
Yeah.
Not a set play, A to B to C, shoot to score. It's A to B to C, get the shot on net, chaos, let our creativity take
over. Well, what about the Leafs power play? Like, why is it so stagnant? Or was it yesterday?
Too
predictable.
Remember when they made that change where Tavares was in front and he was shifting and making passes to Kadri and Matthews for that one-timer? They seem to have gotten away from that. And it just looks like it's Matthews for the shot or over to Marner and the half slapper to the front of the net. And that's what they're bringing.
It is. But they scored on it the other day where Matthews got available.
Well, both Matthews and Tavares went down.
Exactly.
So now you got
two options. And Marner, you need a perfect pass. But it was a perfect pass. And Matthews put in a freebie on the back door.
Right.
But, you know, creativity is what it comes down to. Sometimes you have to let the best players do what they do best.
Yeah, but I like what Pooley just said, what the Bruins are doing. Get the shot on net and then have a chase, outrace them, outman them, and break it down from there.
But that's what the best power plays do. They establish a shot, and then you get it back, and now in the back of your mind you're going, okay, that shot is also available. Now you start, like you say, Johansson's got on the goal line. A couple times he forces it back. Now maybe next time he's going to turn.
Oh, he's going to the net.
And he's going to go to the net.
Yeah, see,
and everyone will sag, and then you can go back or look for options.
Well, that's
the
what
back
I'm talking
door.
About. Mitch Marner, I think he's great on that forehand on the power play. But you know what? I would love to see him on the opposite side as Johansson on the goal line
down
and make
low.
Plays from there.
Yeah.
Either go to the slot, take it to the net, create that 2-on-1.
You got
he
four.
Could be so dangerous there. It would be fantastic.
And you could have four lefties.
All your one-timers on the other side.
Exactly. But I haven't seen him there the whole year.
Because Matthews would be a one-timer in a straight line, then all the way around the clock.
Yeah.
But they don't take slap shots.
Well, you don't need quick
scored
snappers.
On one yesterday.
Yeah.
Who, Riley?
Riley does.
Well, I hear you, but it's still
hit the post on another one.
Yeah,
you know, no one has time to take slappers anymore. Guys fill lanes and sticks and
these guys. A lot of their snapshots are almost as tough as a slap shot.
That Torrey Krug, he takes three steps to the left and it's a hard wrister on net every time.
But that's what I mean. Remember Sergei Zubov?
Zubov was brilliant.
So brilliant at getting his shot through. And it wasn't a slap shot. It was a little snapper just down to the front of the net. And a lot of times it found its way to the net or into the net because it was perfectly placed.
You know who does it now? Mike Green.
Yeah.
Very similar. I'm on ice level between the boxes.
Yeah.
So I'm in a straight line and right behind him. And it's a fascinating view at ice level to see him pick his lane and get it through.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot to chew on for tomorrow, but you're right. Like the power play can be a difference maker or penalty kill, however which way you chop it up.
How did you feel about the Norris candidates? Brent Burns, Mark Giordano, Victor Hedman.
So I had Giordano first, Burns second, Riley third. Yeah.
That's what I thought the three candidates should have been.
Yeah. I had Hedman fifth, I believe.
I think I had Hedman at four. I had Riley at three.
Yeah.
Who the hell voted for this?
Well, there's a lot of people.
They're going to read it small.
Well, no.
It'll come first out. Time. Either Riley way, will be top five. You know, it'll be fourth or fifth.
He's absolutely a lock for four. He didn't make the top three. But it's interesting. I went through, I called Mike Kelly, who works at SportLogic, and just kind of sniffed around some numbers, because I test and then numbers just to make sure you're not missing something when you do your research. Hedman got a lot of love because of stick and all of that, but you're right. You go back to the team that he had. They win 60 games without him anyways.
He's got another number one defenseman on the left side, McDonough, let alone a partner.
That's the one thing I think we even talked about it on this show. Morgan Riley played with Hainsey most of the year. If he was playing with, if Muzzin ended up settling in there, it just looks a lot different.
Yeah. Too. No, I think
he was fantastic.
As much like Victor Hedman's might be the best defenseman in the league. Like,
but there's always a reputation transition with those awards.
Yeah.
Patrice Bergeron is there right now on the Selke, right? Where, once I won a Selke, I was in the top three for the next couple of years. Because your reputation carries
these,
with
like, say why don't they just let Ian Graff do the stick touches inside the blue, defensive zone touches with the stick on stick. Let Ian Graff do it all and piss on voting and piss on performance. Give it all to Ian Graff.
Why so hard
Ian on Graff?
Just whatever.
It's not even his real name.
No. That's Ian his Graff. Name, Ian Graff. No. Just let him do all the awards, stick touches.
Well, listen, no one needs to look at any numbers to know Victor Hedman's a spectacular player.
Yeah, he was like plus 54.
He's an unbelievable
reputational
player,
too, but he's right. Reputational.
He missed 12 games.
I think there's people that are with DeSelke that thought Ryan O'Reilly is the guy. Mm-hmm. Like, as far based on his season.
Right. Well, see what Graff has to say. Graff will break it down.
Morgan Riley,
some other guy.
Morgan Riley, listen, he's going to be there, and he had a. I thought he was fantastic.
He was really good yesterday.
Night. Yeah, I think I know what I'm getting out of him tomorrow.
Hey, there was a time where Scott Niedermeyer, Chris Pronger, and Nick Lidstrom were the three Norris guys.
Yeah,
they
you,
were.
You couldn't.
But you know what?
With a shoehorn,
they deserved it.
Yeah,
I don't think Hedman's at that level yet, where he's just automatic. Throw him in there. Yep.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think what might have hurt Riley is Burns more than Hedman, because as much as Riley had a spectacular year, Burns had 83 points.
Yeah, that's the tough. Like, a point a game. Like, when you're looking at it, the guy legitimately had a point a game as a defenseman.
That's so difficult to achieve.
It's scary.
And Giordano is a borderline lifetime achievement award. He's had a great year. I think he's going to win.
Yeah, there's I'm a little not bit saying of that involved.
But it's also, he's 35. The ball gets rolling on it's Giordano's year, and then it's just naturally going to be
overall
his year.
Right, in the West.
You're right,
yeah.
You're right,
and he had a spectacular year. He should be up for it.
Yeah, there's no debating that. But you're right there. It's recency bias. There's a lot of momentum that gets behind people, and you're like, oh, okay. Like, when I was voting, I tried to make sure I at least covered off everything, but I'm sure, I look back on it, and I'm second guessing some of the things.
Do you
that
compare with anyone? We should actually. Do you compare just to make sure you don't miss something or
I compared with the quizmaster. I compared with a few people that I trust. And I guess I should have called you too, but I wasn't even sure. You're kind of on a time crunch too. It's a lot of time you got to put into
it. Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Like, it's actually a lot of work because you're choosing, and you never want to screw up too. You remember Ovi was chosen as a right wing, but he's a left wing, and
yeah, they try and clear that.
Embarrassing.
Up
it is. Embarrassing. Like, and you never want to be one of those guys where you're like, man, I think I sent you guys what I was kind of leaning towards as coach of the year.
Coach of the year,
and
yeah.
I may have even changed it at the end because I got rattled.
Well, this is an example of why the votes have to be in before the playoffs start, because Kucherov would be in trouble. If you voted today, I people would be like, "Nah, I know what he did, but look at him in the playoffs."
His coach might be in trouble too.
His coach, yeah. Exactly, for a lot of different reasons.
Well, Vasilevsky.
Hedman didn't even play. But when he did play, he was getting cocky and cheeky out there, and he got burned.
So take a look. I mean, Vasilevsky, Vezina, Cooper, coach of the year, and Kucherov,
MVP, and Hedman's up for the...
And all three of those guys were...
Like four playoff games.
They played four more playoff games than the Ottawa Senators.
That's right. What are you going to do?
That's really
all right,
what
boys.
It is.
Thanks for popping in, buddy.
Okay, guys, always a pleasure.
Enjoy
the game tomorrow night.
Enjoy the games tonight, but two games tomorrow, two game sevens. It should be spectacular tomorrow night. There's Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst. Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter, will join us. We'll ask him for some advice. What kind of tweet can we send out about Vladdy's arrival that will put us right down the middle, where we won't piss people off,
right?
But we'll also be able to claim like we called it, because that's where we're at right now. People are just waiting to say, sources saying he's coming up. Yeah, we know. We all know he's coming up.
It's
let's see what Scotty Mitchell has to say about that.
We'll get the fingernail update as well.
This guy, he needs to go up to the Supreme Court. First pitcher in history to be allowed to wear a glove. Aaron Sanchez should be wearing a glove. It's like the guy on tour that gets to wear use a cart.
Casey Martin.
Casey Martin. He went all the way up to the Supreme Court.
But he's got a bad wheel, doesn't he?
This guy, yeah, Sanchez's hand is just falling apart. Every
fourth
of the
start. Casey Martin, he's a dirty dog.
What if he's
tried to mow my lawn 15 really? Years ago?
Come on.
Wow, we got to get
okay, we'll get into that story.
Not that you hold a grudge or anything.
There's a tease.
I was like, they should make him walk.
Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, so we got a guy who is quick on the trigger.
Yeah?
With phoning into the hotline to try to get free tickets.
I like that.
Why are we giving this guy props? He won tickets last week. He tried to get them again.
Well, yeah. That's pretty
well, he's
crafty.
Allowed to do whatever he wants. We're supposed to have some sort of, like, system up where you know.
We have
how
no
about
system.
A vetting process?
Yeah.
You know, there's no system.
Well, listen, the grappler's got oven mitts on back there. He just takes line one, and that's it.
He's just got Freddy Krueger gloves back there handling the control board.
The grappler. So, this morning on First Up, Landsberg and Koliakovo announced a Raptors playoff keyword.
Glad they got to that, by
they
the way.
Did get to they it did. This morning.
Good job, Carlo.
If you heard it, now is your chance to call 416-870-1050. 416-870-1050. The first person through with the correct keyword will win a pair of tickets to see the Raptors take on Orlando tomorrow night, Game 5 down at Scotiabank. Big game, closeout game. Tomorrow night, massive night. I might have to knock the dust off that bit I did last year. Remember last year when it was Game 7 Leafs-Bruins? The Raptors, like Game 4, Game 5.
Yes.
Jays were playing the Red Sox. TFC was down in Mexico, I think, for the Champions League.
So it was like Toronto.
It was like the biggest Toronto sports night of all time. Leafs lost, Jays lost, TFC lost. Raptors found a way to pick up a win, which is to be expected.
But on
what bit did you do? Why would you want to bring it back?
Well, I'm not going to, but remember I called a couple of sports bars throughout the city. And acted as if I was from out of town.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I wanted,
like put the Tigers game on, Detroit Tigers.
I'm in from Detroit. Anyway, I can get the Tigers game on the big screen.
You're not doing that.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that anymore. But it was actually pretty funny because people were like, are you insane? Like,
yeah,
Phil.
That's right, I forgot about that.
It's the biggest Toronto sports night of all time.
And we'll cold call somebody tomorrow. Just fire up. Just somewhere.
We flew in from Denver. The Rockies have a big game tonight.
I know the spot to call, too. We'll save it for tomorrow.
All right, so we might do that live on the air, just to see what kind of reaction we'll get.
Right? Didn't Friday night Toronto sports teams go 6-0?
6-0. The rugby team picked up a win. TFC won.
Yeah.
The Marlies
Jays won.
Jays, Raptors, and Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
What a night Friday night was.
Thought I saw that.
And then Sunday afternoon came around. The Raptors found a way to pick up a win. The Jays are on fire.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Tomorrow night, maybe we'll have a different story.
You never know.
You never know. Here's one thing I do know. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is coming up at some point this week.
Yes, he is.
He's not going to be playing tomorrow night. They might call him up, although I don't see why you would. You'd have to make a roster move, and you're just going to sit on the bench? It's not going to happen. Maybe
Wednesday, the day after the Leafs game 7.
Maybe Wednesday, but it's a 4:37 start, I believe. It's an afternoon start.
I say
so what?
I think they want prime time. They're off Thursday. They play Friday against Oakland at home.
Friday's that's my game for him. Next Friday.
I'm circling Friday. I'm thinking if I send out a tweet hearing Vladdy Guerrero Jr. will be up by the end of the week, I think I can take credit for this scoop.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I can take credit for it.
But it's a blanket scoop. But
that
you know.
Anyone could take claim for.
Absolutely.
But I'm going to get there first.
Okay,
Here's Scott Mitchell, our TSN 1050 Jays reporter. You're a man of journalistic integrity. How rattled would you be if I got out in front of this and just said, hearing Vladdy is coming up by the end of the week, even though I have no sources and I couldn't corroborate it at all, I just feel like it's probably going to happen.
Hey, just as long as you tack on that you're hearing that he's going to be really good as well, I think that tweet will go viral. So okay. I'm fine with that.
Because it feels like a foregone conclusion, right? Like he's coming up at some point this week, I
Why
think.
Why don't we ask the man when he thinks?
Well, yeah, all right. Yeah. You give us the scoop, Scotty.
Logically, I think Friday should be the day. When you kind of look at the whole situation, they've been saying on the record, and when I say they, I say Ross Atkins and the front office, you know, they wanted to get him a stretch of games. And when you look at him playing tonight in Syracuse, he could play tomorrow in Syracuse. He could play Wednesday night in Syracuse, and that would be the first time all season that he's played on three consecutive days. And that's a big milestone. That's a hurdle because, you know, these guys need to play every single day. They need to be ready. So then when you look at the off day on Thursday, I think you could probably announce it if you're the Blue Jays, get a little momentum for Friday night's game, and, you know, there we are. So, I mean, that seems like the logical way to do it. And he just has to get into these games over these next 3 days and, you know, clear that final hurdle.
Do you think they would have considered tomorrow night with the Leafs-Bruins Game 7, Raptors-Magic Game 5? Like, do they want to promote this promotion and promote this platform that he's going to have, that it's the most anticipated debut in franchise history?
Sure. I definitely think they would like to promote it, but I really believe the three consecutive games, getting him into a good stretch. And, you know, when you look at that and you kind of scoff at it from the big picture perspective, I mean, what is that going to do for this kid? You know, these guys need to play every day and they need to be ready, and they want to put him in the most, you know, the best position to succeed right out of the gates. And, you know, getting him 3 days of at-bats in hopefully decent weather down there in Syracuse, you know, that sets him up pretty good. You know, I think they looked at this general time frame, you know, had he stayed healthy and not suffered that oblique injury. I think this was kind of the general time frame. I mean, I think you can find, you know, some writing I did in the winter that kind of pointed out this area of the schedule that would be seen realistic from, you know, as far back as December. So, you know, I think this was the week they kind of looked at if everything kind of fell into place, and then that's what we're going to be here. And, you know, this is a wait that has, you know, frustrated a lot of fans, and it's obviously caused a little bit of a stir over the last few days. You know, I've been called an idiot on Twitter more than ever, and that's just because these guys want to see Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in a Blue Jays uniform. And like you said, this is the most anticipated debut, I would say, in franchise history. And, you know, that includes a number of, you know, high profile free agents, like, you know, guys like Jose Canseco that people want to see. This is the kid. This is the future. This is the cornerstone. And, you know, if something happens to him, you know, this whole rebuild kind of goes sideways potentially.
What's the deal with Sanchez fingernails, blisters? I mean, is this going to become a big time problem again? I saw a tweet the other day. It was like, this guy's got like just electric stuff, Hall of Famer type stuff, and is it going to just go to waste because of his fingernails?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be really interesting. Obviously, the Blue Jays are off today, and, you know, after last night's game, Charlie Montoyo thought that, you know, maybe he would miss one start, maybe it wasn't as bad, so they've kind of portrayed it as a, you know, best case scenario, and they got him out of there to make sure it didn't get worse. But you know, like you say, I've heard that numerous times with this guy. Last year they expected him to miss one start or two starts when he you know, cut his finger in the luggage, you know, allegedly, and you know, he ended up being out, and that ended his season. So with this guy and fingers, it's just a, you know, a recurring theme. And, you know, it sounds like it's just a broken nail, but I mean, what led to that broken nail, and why is that happening? Because he obviously can't pitch like that. So you know, I haven't broken a nail in a long time, but I think you know, it's tough. I mean, I'd be shocked if he didn't need a stint on the 10-day injured list at this point. But, you know, it's unfortunate because he did. He looked electric. The stuff was nasty. The curveball was coming back. He was using his whole repertoire. And when you talk to him, he felt so positive. And, you know, after 2 years of really seeing it on his face, how frustrated he was, he looked like he was in a good spot. And then yesterday, you kind of see that face return as he's looking down, you know, at the ball and at his finger. And, you know, if you're the Blue Jays, you really hope this is just a blip on the radar. But considering his history, man, I don't know how you can have any confidence that this will be a short-term thing.
Some of the Blue Jays in spring training were talking about the importance of having some veteran leadership and guys in the clubhouse that have been around. And it seemed like Matt Shoemaker kind of was filling that void. You know, we had the deal where all the pitchers walked out together and they said, you know, we're a group and you're battling all of us if you battle one of us. And then that happens to him with his knee. I mean, how disappointing is that for that group and the player himself?
Yeah, definitely. This is another guy who, you know, we talked about it in spring training that, you know, every single one of these guys in the rotation has had serious health issues over the last couple of years. So there was really no confidence that that wouldn't continue. And, you know, just a freak play on the rundown, the torn ACL. I mean, you know, when I saw the play, it didn't look good the way he reacted. But I thought maybe, you know, he would dodge a bullet and it would just be some sort of, you know, minor damage that wouldn't, you know, be a full year. But, you know, you're right. He kind of really, you know, started to become the glue to that rotation, almost the veteran presence that brought that group together in a very short time. And just like Aaron Sanchez, this guy was pitching tremendously well, and he started to look like the guy a couple of years ago that the Angels thought they had. And, you know, what they thought they had was, you know, essentially a ready-made number three starter, a guy who can, you know, slide in behind an ace and give you those seven strong innings, and that's what he was doing. And, you know, now it's the same case as Aaron Sanchez. When you look at his last two, three, four seasons, you know, there's nowhere close to a full season on the resume, and you wonder if things will, you know, ever turn around. And, you know, the one thing with Shoemaker, that if you wanted to really look at the glass half full perspective, at least it's not another arm injury. So something like that, I mean, an ACL, he can recover, should be good to go, you know, next year in spring training. It'll be interesting to see, because the Blue Jays do control him for another year. They're going to have to pick that up about $5+ million to get him back in that rotation. So, you know, this kind of throws a wrench into those plans as well as any plans to, you know, potentially trade him or Sanchez at the deadline. So, you know, everything was looking up for this rotation, and then in the span of a weekend out in California, everything kind of fell apart.
Well, I mean, it sounds callous, but that's the truth. Like, Shoemaker had a good start, and I think the majority of people in Toronto thought, just get to July and flip him. And, mm-hmm. and it's even right. more complicated with Sanchez, because he's got such great stuff. He's such a, you know, he's a homegrown talent. If he's pitching well and he's healthy, he could really bring in a boatload. I mean, Shoemaker was only going to bring in so much. Aaron Sanchez, it kind of feels like the Donaldson scenario. Like, now, I don't think they could have traded him in the offseason anyway, because I'm not sure what they could have received. But if this guy misses another 6 weeks due to injury, there's not going to be a trade market. Like, who's going to be trading for Aaron Sanchez?
Yeah, no, nobody's going to be trading for Aaron Sanchez unless it's 10 cents on the dollar. And,
right.
And you know, you do have some time. And the best part, I think, that when you look at the Sanchez as well as Stroman situations, is you got another year of team control. So you're not really at the Donaldson stage at this point, but definitely approaching that territory. And, you know, it's going to be key for him to get on the mound this year, because you want to market him in the winter as well with a full year of control. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, the first 3 weeks for this ball club, as far as the rotation, when you look down the road at the trade deadline, Marcus Stroman, Aaron Sanchez, and Matt Shoemaker were all pitching lights out and looking like we talked about back in the spring, of how Ross Atkins could be at the table in July as a power player at the deadline, with three starting pitchers with a little bit of team control, pitching well and healthy. And now we're obviously talking about more health issues. And like I said, with when you look at the track record of these guys, I mean, it's hard to imagine you know, things turning around quickly now that it's you know, we're not even at the end of April, and we're looking at obviously potentially maybe a DL sent for Sanchez already.
Thank you, Scotty. Always appreciate it, buddy.
All right, boys. Take care.
There's Scott Mitchell, our TSN 1050 Jays reporters. So even though the Jays bats have come alive and they're winning a bunch of games, Sanchez, it's exactly like last year. Remember with the luggage stuff? They're like, oh, he might miss a start. We're not that worried. The guy missed 6 weeks or seven weeks.
It's not good.
No. And there's no way he's only missing a start. Like, there's just, if you crack open your fingernail and you have that many injuries in the past with that hand and your pitching hand, there's no way this guy's performing again in a week.
What kind of glove could he?
I think he needs to go like full blown, like a Michael Jackson type. The thing is, if you go all the way to the Supreme Court and somehow they allow you to wear, do you have to wear? I don't know what kind of, like, are you talking
like
latex?
Rollins,
are you talking?
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Wear what Derek Taylor used to wear on SportsCenter. He wore a rubber finger cover.
Like what teachers, like that,
yeah,
like secretaries,
so
that turn
the
pages.
You never seen that?
Yeah, I've seen it. I don't remember Derek Taylor wearing
that. I don't remember
that.
Him wearing that.
I used to see it every time I saw him. I'm like, what the hell does that guy have on his finger?
I find that hard to believe, that whoever's running SportsCenter would allow him to wear that.
Dude, somebody give clarity. This guy wore it every show. It was
every single show.
Every show.
The little page turner.
It's like a finger
thing.
Condom.
A finger condom.
Right?
It wasn't quite that.
A magnum finger condom.
No, but you know, like one of those, and it's got the The spikes on it,
yeah,
so
the
you
spikes.
Can turn.
It was for school use.
All right. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by Proline. We'll try to clarify what I think is fake news.
I'm telling you, ask anybody.
We got to find out, like, Natasha or whoever worked with him.
The guy had a rubber finger. That's why he got tossed out to Sasky.
We miss Derek Taylor. He's a good man.
Yeah, we love the guy.
Glenn Schiller just wrote, yep. He wore it every show.
I swear to God, how would Glenn know that?
Well, Glenn works with
us. Yeah, a few times. Not every single time
he's
on the panel.
He had a brown rubber finger
cover on.
Maybe
he would sit down. I guarantee you before the show, he'd sit down and pop it open in a little briefcase and take it out and fly it.
Maybe that's how he'd warm up. He'd just sit there and fly through his pages.
Just flip it.
Wow, he's going to just crush SportsCenter tonight.
He's just going to Sasky with the Bills.
The old finger condom. Overdrive continues. Awesome. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by Proline. Looking at the two hockey games tonight, I'm on Washington. I think they close it, but I think Nashville survives tonight. Throw down 20, you can score 74. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Proline, get way into the game.
I told you that creep.
Yeah, we've got some breaking news here.
So,
or the finger thing.
Our boy Derek Taylor, who was a SportsCenter anchor for years, and now he's taken a play-by-play gig out with the Saskatchewan Roughriders.
And he's going to do a great job.
He's a spectacular guy. He loves the CFL like no one I've ever met before. So
passionate.
He is right in his element. Yeah. But when he's up in the booth, he's going to have a finger condom on. A thimble.
We'll call it a thimble. Let's keep this PG.
Call it a finger condom. It's not that.
A Jimmy.
It's all one and the same. It's the little thing on the thumb to help you.
A thimble.
There, it's up on TSN 2 right now. You can kind of see it. It's not the greatest picture, but you can kind of see it. He's up there with Natasha.
Yeah.
So we've all been getting messages from different SportsCenter anchors.
Yeah, he wears it every show.
Who wrote you a note immediately?
Glenn Schiller.
Noodles, who reached out to you?
Gurdeep. And said, confirmed. I want to read Gurdeep's note. He said, DT wore
look
the finger
look at this picture
Jimmy.
Right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking
look at
that
thing.
I know that.
It's just...
It's absurd. I can't believe he was allowed to wear that every single show.
Who wrote you? Joe from the Bridge.
Joe from the Bridge.
Yeah, he sent a picture.
Okay. Jennifer Hedger. Every show, like a bank teller. I've never seen anything like it.
I think it's unique.
I guess.
Like, he's like Michael Jackson. He wore a glove.
Yeah, I guess if you're going to wear a whatever it is.
A thimble. We'll call it a thimble.
That's his thing. No one else can ever wear it. You got to retire it. That should be retired. No other SportsCenter anchor can ever wear
it.
Put it
in a glass case.
Right. Anyway. All right. Big one tomorrow.
Be good.
Get your sleep tonight. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
Confirm and deny at 4 p.m.
Join us.